All right, so in this workshop this morning, we're going to be exploring the question of how a teacher can command respect with their students. And I had an interesting discussion with Joe Beiler earlier this week. He asked me, well, can a teacher command respect? Is that the same thing as demanding respect? And so we talked about that a little bit. And there's a difference. I don't believe it works very well to demand respect. Just like it doesn't work very well to demand that somebody trust you, right? But I think you can use the word command in sort of a, you've earned the respect, and so therefore you command it. It's at your disposal at that point. So I just wanted to clarify a little bit about the title there at the beginning, Commanding Respect. And I don't know why you're here this morning, but perhaps you've struggled with disrespect from students in the past. Perhaps there's a student that's coming into your classroom this coming year that you fear is going to be disrespectful. And maybe you've had experience with just one student who has been disrespectful, and you found that their disrespect is incredibly draining to you as a teacher. And I think that facing disrespect from our students is probably one of the most discouraging things a teacher can face. Not only does it bring discouragement to us, but sometimes it can bring out the worst in us as well as teachers. And especially for us men, the issue of respect is really important and dear to us. And when respect is undermined, we feel like it takes the joy out of everything we're doing. So my hope today, my goal today is to leave you encouraged and I hope equipped to better face this coming year and the years ahead with confidence and courage in this particular category. And as we think about commanding respect, I want us to think about the people that we admire and respect the most. What character traits do they possess that cause you to respect or admire them? And I've come to realize that one of the primary methods that we teach in our classrooms is by example, by modeling things. For example, we model math problems on the board, right? And in the same way, we model certain behaviors to our students and how we live our lives in the classroom and perhaps you could say, unfortunately, outside of the classroom as well. If you're a teacher, you're a teacher 24/7 and all summer long. And even before you get in the classroom for the first time, your students are watching you, right? So you can't get away from it, really. So the first part of our workshop today, we're going to answer this question here. What defines a teacher who commands respect in their classroom? And I've selected 11 qualities that define a teacher who commands respect, but I selected those understanding that there are many, many more that we could probably talk about and discuss. And the thing is, each of these qualities could probably take a workshop all of its own, right? So we're kind of skimming the surface here. But the first one I've chosen, a teacher who commands respect, is professional. If you treat your work as a teacher as a profession, you will do much better at it than if you treat it as a sacrifice or a service. Teaching is a unique mission field, that is true. But in some ways, so is construction work, so is computer programming, farming. They're all their own unique mission field. And so I think we need to be a little bit careful about separating the mission field from just our normal jobs. And as a professional, you should be someone who is working to give the best that you can give, right? And so you're striving for excellence. And some ways that we can do this is capitalizing on our strengths. And we can do that quickly. If you're good at teaching, say, math, you can capitalize on that strength quickly in your first year of teaching. I've been given the advice when I was first teaching to take one subject that I felt comfortable with and really focus on doing a good job on that my first year, and each year kind of add to that. And that was really wise advice. I found that very helpful. But you can also be a professional by slowly strengthening your weak areas. That's important too. And this happens over a long stretch of time, over weeks and months and many times over years. And you have to just kind of be okay with giving yourself time. Like any professional, you should always be looking to deepen your knowledge of the field you're working in. That's part of the reason you're here. So good for you. I have a couple of friends who are doctors, and I'm always impressed with especially doctors at how much reading and studying they do just to stay caught up in their field so that they're cutting edge. It's just part of what they do. And you are kind of, could you say, a doctor of education, rightly discerning the word of truth, if I can apply that verse. And I just want to put a little bit of a plug in for long-term teachers here. And I'm not sure yet how long-term or what long-term looks like. I've taught for 5 years. But I think many people approach teaching with the idea that, well, they'll do it for 1 year. Maybe they'll do it for two. And after that, they're not sure. Probably move on to something else. And I think it would be a better approach if we had approached teaching with this idea that I'm going to teach until God says, you know what, it's time to move on to something else. And then we move on then.
Amen.
It's been my experience as a teacher that even though maybe I don't make as much financially as many other men my age, God has worked out for my needs just fine and often in miraculous ways. And so I think God will watch out for you as a teacher. A teacher who commands respect is self-disciplined. And this follows closely on the heels of being professional. But being self-disciplined is essential for commanding respect from your students. We naturally respect people who are self-disciplined people, that we perceive that way. For example, we guys especially, we admire Navy SEALs because of their intense discipline, right? We find that easy to do. Disciplined people are easy for us to respect. And so likewise, you can command respect by modeling discipline in your own life. It will just naturally command respect. But some, practically speaking, there's some areas that most of us could probably increase our discipline. And I'm kind of preaching to myself. These are all maybe things I struggle with. So getting up on time. And I didn't say early because that's a bit subjective, right? Sleep experts say that it's important to wake up at about the same time or close to the same time every day, even on weekends. Which is a hard one for some people. And it's way too easy to hit the snooze button a million times, right? And the thing I found is that I can get quite disciplined in this during the school year, and then summer comes and my schedule changes, and oh boy, I fall right back into that old undisciplined habit of hitting the snooze button. Getting to school consistently about the same time, maybe I should say in good time, or add that, I believe your day is going to kind of trend towards chaos if you just kind of chaotically appear at school whenever it works out. So try to aim at a consistent time when you arrive at school. Reading your Bible, why, is something that we would all acknowledge is so very, very critically important to us as teachers. Why is it so hard to put that on the back burner? Maybe you guys find it easy to keep it at the forefront. But I think Satan's at work here in some way, undermining our desire to spend time with God's Word. And I remember what someone told me once that really helped me in this area and kind of overcome maybe my perfection complex in this. And they said, if it's better to read just a paragraph of God's Word each day than to read none at all. And that kind of helped me move on from this thing of, well, I have to spend at least 30 minutes, you know, spending time with God, or it's not worth the effort, right? So spending just a little time is worthwhile. Prayer is another one, and it is a powerful and effective tool. It increases our faith, it increases our courage, it works. We need to be praying every day. And again, Satan's at work here, and if you've been disciplined about prayer in your life, it's amazing. It's an amazing experience to see how God works. But the thing I've discovered is that even though I've experienced all those amazing things, it's so easy for me to slip back into the pitfall where I don't pray about things like I should. And I'm not sure why that happens, but it does. Reading. Now, I'm a dad and a teacher, and I don't have time to do some of the things that I wish I could. Unfortunately, I find it easy to pull out maybe some social media and things like that easier than just reading. But a couple of years ago, I kind of started a discipline of kind of prioritizing reading again. And the unfortunate thing is that I discovered is that since I'd kind of not read for a long time, it was really hard to get back into reading again and be I used to be a bookworm, so to speak. And it's really hard for me as an adult to stay focused reading. And I'm afraid I've become undisciplined in that. And so it's something I want to work on and am working on. But exercise your ability to read and be okay spending as much time as needed to read. I think you should make it a priority as a teacher to do lots of reading. Listening to books as well. Because books broaden your horizon and your knowledge and your ability to excel as a teacher. Another rule of thumb I use for books is that I budget for a lot of things, but books do not fall in my budget. I just buy books. If I want a book, I just buy it. Okay, that doesn't fall in my budget. Getting your work done. Let's face it, some of the most wasted time in our day happens right after our alarm rings in the morning and right after the closing bell of school, I've found. When the students leave the classroom, I find it's easy just to breathe a sigh of relief and relax, and I go make myself a cup of coffee, and I start responding to the WhatsApp messages, or looking at WhatsApp messages, and maybe the WhatsApp statuses too. And then I go around, and maybe a co-teacher stops by, and we have a long chat, which is great. And I do many useful, productive things. I do many wholesome things, or maybe some unwholesome things, or not so wholesome. But suddenly an entire hour has gone by, and I've not really achieved anything of the work that I have to get done. And it's really hard to get started again once you've stopped. And so having routines in place for how you end your day can be really helpful. And I mentioned this in my declutter class yesterday, but I find it really helpful to have a goal to have my desk organized and arranged by the end of the day, but before the students leave. That way I know exactly what I have to do after they leave. I know what my task list is ahead of me. And if I've worked really hard during the day on some of those things, sometimes I'm able to grab my Kindle and sit down on the couch and read for 30 minutes because I know I have the time to do that. And that's a really great incentive, but I've worked for that, right? And it's not a waste of time. If there's a bunch of grading, I try to knock a lot of that out right after school. Having a cutoff time, have a time of the day that you commit not to work past, and for me that's 5 p.m., unless there's something unusual going on, like a school board meeting or something like that. But the thing with the cutoff time is people respect other people who set reasonable limits on themselves and kind of stick to those. Your work can wait, and you can let some things slide. A teacher who commands respect is consistent. And this follows on the heels of discipline. It can be incredibly challenging to be consistent in any area. And I believe a good teacher tends to be consistent in many of these areas, even ones maybe that are outside of school, like getting up at the same time and getting to school and leaving school at consistent times. Being consistent with our preparation of classes. Now, if you blow the class out of the water with a PowerPoint presentation that's in-depth and detailed for your history lesson, I think that's amazing. Go you. But only if you can be consistent with doing that. And I've discovered that often my dreams of a perfectly taught class are not actually sustainable dreams. And I don't believe you should try to go where you cannot sustain in your classroom. One thing that I found really helpful back several years ago to help limit myself in some of this was doing class prep on a sticky note. And that was all the notes I had for sharing the class that I was about to teach. And boy, that forced me to slim things down to what was most important. That was really helpful to me. Another thing I've done to limit myself is study my history lesson at the same time my students are reading it. So they begin reading their history lesson, and I read it while they're reading it. And then they go on and do the work in their light unit, and I pick out a few things that I would like to discuss in class. And then I get up front, and we grade together in class, and I make a few comments, and I sit down. That's the extent of my history lesson. Otherwise, I would not be able to be consistent with that. Consistency in our discipline of bad behavior, another important one. If you're a teacher who has a really light hand and then suddenly you blow your top and suddenly it's a heavy hand, I think you're in for trouble. If students have a problem with coming in late, I think you should be consistent with how you discipline that. A teacher who commands respect is merciful and kind. If you're not a teacher who is kind who is willing to extend mercy to a struggling student or the misbehaving student, you're cutting your career short. You're not going to make it very far. It's important to make students feel safe, and students will feel safe if they sense that you are a kind teacher. Even if you're a tough teacher, I think both things can be true at the same time. If a student is over their heads with schoolwork, I think you should be merciful and do what you can to help them get back on track. Sometimes that's some mentoring, and we'll talk about some of that later. Maybe they're behind because of their own lack of discipline. We run into that a lot. And I think it's fine to be hard on them and have them stay in from recesses and send homework home with them and work with their parents on this. But at some point in their good effort, I think you need to acknowledge their good effort and be merciful and help them get kind of back on track. I think that can be appropriate. A teacher who commands respect is patient and long-suffering. Unless you are a teacher with a slight halo around your head, you are going to find your patience tested. Never, ever lose your patience with a student. And I cannot stress that enough. The Bible says love is patient and love is kind. And when you sense your patience is running out, what do? You take a deep breath and remember how damaging it's going to be if you blow your top or react in a poor way. Because if you lose your patience, you're going to lose your respect of your students, almost guaranteed. Or guaranteed, maybe I should just put it that way. And the cost is not worth it. So when you're tempted to lose your patience, stop and breathe a prayer to know how to respond rightly. Keep that individual in during recess or after school and talk with them. Address it. These people, we're geared towards the upper grades, right? These people are young adults, all right? And they need to be held accountable. And your primary job as a teacher, my vision as a teacher is that I'm raising these people to be productive in God's kingdom, in the church. And a part of that is holding them accountable. And they're going to find it uncomfortable, and you might find it uncomfortable to address it. But it's very wholesome for them and for you. And many times I found that when I address a problem with a student, that it opens my understanding of their lives a little bit. And gives me a more of a love for them and appreciation for them than what I had before. And the thing is, many times there are deeper things under the surface than the problem itself. I've discovered that over and over. So be long-suffering. A teacher who commands respect is honest about their mistakes. And I don't know if you've ever seen a professional, been in the presence of someone you perceive as a professional, make a mistake and then just pick up and go on as if nothing happened. They just did it with confidence, I guess you would say. And I've always been impressed by that. They're not scared of their mistake. They're not scared that they made a mistake in front of somebody. They're not embarrassed by that. And the thing I think we need to learn as teachers from this is that instead of trying to cover your mistakes, you should try to be transparent. You should be transparent about your mistakes. This was actually some of the first teaching advice I ever got when I first started teaching, was just be open and admit your failures, because your students will see them. If you try to cover them, you will lose their respect. And it was some of the best teaching advice I ever got. And as a teacher, I've made lots of mistakes. Some are more embarrassing than others. I still make mistakes on my lesson planning for the week. I've made mistakes with the facts that I teach. I've gotten mixed up on which day of the week it is, and as a result, I've missed like my music class that I intended to teach. How does that happen? I've made mistakes with how I've disciplined students. That's a really sobering one. And I've made mistakes with how I've managed the day. Here's a mistake I made. I didn't discover this until a student kindly pointed this out at lunchtime. What do you do? Your students. Your students will make many mistakes as well through their school year. And an important part of education is learning from our mistakes. And when they see their teacher is learning from their mistakes and just being unafraid to admit their mistakes and laugh about those mismatched shoes and wearing them for the rest of the day, it makes a student more comfortable about their own mistakes. It really does. So be vulnerable. Be vulnerable in this. And I try to be candid and vulnerable with my students, especially in morning devotions, about things that I'm struggling with, like fears or maybe a lack of faith, and just bringing myself down to a very human level, because I am human along with them. A teacher who commands respect is caring. Learn to love and care for your students. Students can quickly sense your concern for them, for your care for them, and they're impacted by this. Show your care by speaking into their personal lives. And let them talk and be willing to listen and give your own input into that. Some of my students have their own cell phones now. And getting their number and sending them a text occasionally, I think, is a good way to speak into their personal lives outside of the classroom. If they end up in the hospital, coming up with a sunshine box or sending cards can be good. Learn to love your students by praying for them. Perhaps one of the best ways to increase your love for the student that is maybe hard to love sometimes is just praying for them, I found. A teacher who commands respect communicates. We've had lots of discussion about communication from Brother Ivan there. Communication is a key component of any relationship, so have lots of communication with students. And communicate with the parents, and have lots of community outside of the classroom as well. And you should communicate concerns, challenges, your ideas, your praise, your expectations. Those are all important things to communicate. A teacher who commands respect is down to earth. Just because you are a professional doesn't mean that you get to be on the pedestal above everyone else. And you can be as professional as you like, but if you hold yourself above others, they're not going to respect you. So when we all know what it feels like to interact with professionals who are down to earth and easy to talk to, and those people especially just naturally win our respect because of that. So be this kind of professional teacher. A teacher who commands respect is respectful of their authority. And it's so easy for us teachers to begin criticizing school board or parents or whoever. But be very careful. Don't go here and don't criticize the school board in front of your co-teachers. I don't think that's healthy. Always show your respect for authority in the school, authority in the church, authority in the government, even dear Joe Biden, who we sometimes find difficult to maybe show respect to in a proper way. You can acknowledge that you don't agree with these authorities in some areas, even your school board. It's fine to acknowledge that. But your example of how you react to that thing that you, or how you submit to that, is really impactful to your students and will go a long way. It's really a big testimony. A teacher commands respect models Christ-like behavior. So you're going to have to model all the behaviors that you expect of your students. And this doesn't mean that you have to do all the work that your students do, but it just means that you're modeling these behaviors. So be a student yourself. Always be learning and interested in learning. Keep notes, whatever. Go to church. It's easy as a teacher to say, I'm busy, I'm not able to go to church this evening. I've been here many times, but we need to make that a priority. Serve others. Be a kingdom builder. Your job, I believe, is to make kingdom builders out of your students, right? And so you're going to have to model this by involving yourself in service opportunities that come up and whatever that may look like. This summer, my wife and I had a really unique opportunity to spend 6 weeks in Germany working with Middle Eastern refugees that are settling there. And it was an amazing experience, deeply enriching for us as a couple. And I think it's going to enrich my classroom as well. But that's all great. But the thing with service opportunities is usually they don't look that way. Most service opportunities are small and they're unappreciated and they're messy. And it's good for us to remember that and involve ourselves in those things too. And there's other character qualities as well for a teacher to develop and exercise, like neatness. Model neatness in your writing so that you can encourage students in theirs. Carefulness. Model carefulness in your teaching or your students will model something else. Leadership. Take leadership or your students will take leadership. Confidence. Be confident even when you're scared. Optimism. Be upbeat in your classroom. Courage. Face the difficult problems in your classroom knowing God is for you. Generosity. Giving of your time and money. Humor. Laughing a lot and telling good jokes. Enthusiasm. Be excited about learning and teaching. Calmness. Be calm in the midst of an emergency or in a time of excitement, like when the helicopter flies right across the school. Or the sonic boom. We get sonic booms fairly regularly there at our school. Shakes the whole building. It's quite fascinating. Thankfulness. Thank the students for their contribution. Thank their parents for their support. Thank God for giving you this job, etc. So, being a teacher of deep character will naturally gain you, I think, the deep respect of your students. But you have to put in the work to develop these characters. For most of us, not all of these qualities that we talked about come very easily. And so we have to work at them. Oh, fruits of the Spirit. And the list could go on here. So the next half here, I want to talk about practical pointers for a teacher who commands respect. And I hope I've already given you some things that you can find practical and useful in your classrooms. But I want to think about some ways that we can command respect in our classrooms. First one is commanding respect by respecting your students. Young people, especially in the adolescence age, they love to be treated like adults. And in fact, I found they often kind of thrive on that. And I've come to believe that many times these older students will kind of match our expectations for how they behave and act. So in my upper grades, I approach it with the attitude that they are young adults. And some practical ways that you can respect your students as young adults are these. You can tell them that you see them as young adults. Tell them that at the beginning of the year. You know what? You guys are adults, and so I expect you to act like adults in my classroom. Refer to the ladies as ladies. Don't call them girls. That's almost derogatory to call an adolescent lady a girl. Call the guys gentlemen. Don't call them boys. They're not boys anymore. Sometimes it's okay to refer to them as guys. Even the whole classroom as guys. Sometimes I think that's okay. But be careful with that. Respect the fact that as adolescents, they are usually very self-aware and get embarrassed quickly. So because of that, you should be careful about publicly rebuking an individual. It can be very hurtful. When they misbehave, and they will, right? Remind them that, you know what? You are a young adult, but that behavior didn't quite fit with that. Okay, so think about that. And make them think about that. Command respect with your students by seeking to understand them. And again, adolescence can be a really challenging time for a person. And so trying to understand them is important. Understand that many of them feel self-conscious about themselves. Understand that many, especially young ladies, are struggling with inferiority complexes to some degree. Understand that some of your students may be miserable because they are living under conviction. They've not given their hearts to Christ yet. And that's actually a good thing. That's part of the process. It's part of the way that God calls them. Understand that some of them have tough things going on at home, whether that's battles with cancer, or maybe an older sibling who is rebellious and left home, or maybe it's a single parent home. But understanding when there's great pain or confusion at home can really help us genuinely love that student that are in those situations. And oftentimes, those are the students that bring their pain with them and cause problems in the classroom. So they need special understanding. Command respect by exercising healthy competition. And I had another workshop earlier this week, Winning and Losing Successfully, where we talked about this. But sometimes, especially guys, can be very competitive. And I think there can be a very healthy aspect to competition, okay? Don't get me wrong. But on the flip side, I think it can become unhealthy if students begin to believe that the reason we play is for the competition, if that makes sense. Our game should not be so much about the competition so much as it is about teamwork and having a good time and working together, I believe. Another thing to remember here is that you as a teacher do not have to be better than your students at everything at all costs. That would be a really huge burden, especially in these older grades. There are students that can outrun me and outspike me and can play softball and catch in softball way better than I can. So what can I bring that allows them to respect me on the playground? And some ideas here. One is a good attitude. I can bring a good example of what it looks like to be a good sport and to win and lose successfully, like we talked about in that other workshop. You can bring an attitude of never giving up, giving my best, and bringing strategy and my brains as a teacher. I can use that to outsmart my students sometimes. Don't think I have time for a story that I would have loved to say. But command respect by apologizing when you wrong someone. This goes closely back with admitting our mistakes, right? But this is One of the greatest relationship skills that anyone can learn is exercising this humility to go back to someone that we wronged and say, I'm sorry, I made a mistake, and try to make that right. And there's times that we make mistakes in our classroom that have an impact on our relationships with our students. Like when we discipline wrongly, or we say something that hurts someone, or sometimes we say a joke that maybe wasn't a good fit for the classroom. And even if it was not an inappropriate joke, sometimes the jokes we say may be closer to a situation that a student is dealing with at home, like a death. And those can be really painful. So we need to watch out for that. Sometimes we fail miserably in just teaching a class, and we just have to say, you know what? I have to sit down and restudy this math lesson. I've done that several times. You know, I did not get it. Sorry. But when these things happen, it's appropriate just to apologize to the classroom and to the individual and make the wrong as right as we can. And just modeling that is such a powerful testimony to your students in living for Christ. Command respect by being reasonable and flexible. If you are unreasonable in the demands and expectations that you put on students, you're going to lose their respect quickly. Not only of the students, but also the parents as well. And I don't mean that you should not push your students. You should. But you should be flexible too. Don't toe the line so rigidly that you can never extend a recess or bump a lesson if you need to. A prime example of this is a ball game. Don't stop a ball game when it's tied in the last inning. Not a good place to stop a ball game. You will lose the respect of your classroom, I promise. Spend the extra time and finish it out. And you don't have to play 9 innings in a ball game. You can play 5. Just play it to a fair quitting point. Command respect by standing your ground. So while being reasonable and flexible, you can also command respect by standing your ground. And my rule of thumb is to say no often and make your yes count then. Sometimes I tell students, I need to think about that. And then I say no a couple minutes later. Or I say yes, depending. Be hesitant to change your schedule on the whims of the students. They love to tweak your schedule in the classroom. And be hesitant to change your own whims as well. I'm quick to kind of go down that path, and I have to limit myself a bit. If there's not a good reason for students to study outside together, then just say no. If your policy is that students stay inside the classroom or in the adjoining room, if you have that, to work together on group activities, just stick with that. Now, I do occasionally let my students go outside, especially in the spring. We've been cooped up all winter long. I'll let them go out and do a lesson of history together or something. But it's the exception for me to allow them to do that. And so I think it's fine to be kind of hard-headed as a teacher about these kind of insignificant requests from students. And I think it's fine also to make it clear that you're quicker to give older students who show maturity some more freedoms than some of the younger ones. That gives some of the younger ones something to work towards in their future years. Command respect by respecting the parents. Now, you don't have to bend to every whim of the micromanaging parent, which we sometimes have. But you should still respect them and remember that you are supposed to be working as a team alongside them. And I've had different occasions when parents have come to me. Maybe a parent has come to me and said, you know what, my student is coming home and they're spending all evening on their homework every evening, and they're not even able to help with the household chores. What can we do? Is there something that we could do? And so I would encourage you to understand these types of concerns from parents and take their input seriously and see what you can change. You don't have to destroy your plans or your schedule, really, but at least think about it. And Often the parent wants to work with you towards a solution. Sometimes, or maybe I should say many times, parents come to you and say, this is a problem, and here is what I think would be a good solution. And what I've discovered is that makes my feathers get all ruffled up. And sometimes it's not a good solution. And so I would just encourage us not to get our feathers all ruffled up about that. Rather just tell them, well, that doesn't really work well, but let me think about it and come back with, here's a solution I think could be kind of a middle ground for us. Shall we try that? And 9 times out of 10, they're great with that. The other thing to remember about parents is that many times they feel like they are more in the wrong than you are, actually. It may not come across that way, but I've discovered that after the fact. So do what you can to work with parents. And the bottom line is, when you show preference and respect to parents, you will almost certainly earn the high respect. I'm sorry, I have this backwards. No, I don't. When you show preference and respect to parents, you will earn the high respect of students as well. Command respect by coaching your students. Young people are only beginning to navigate the complexities of life. And academics are great for the information that they teach, but they're also great for stretching a student beyond what they are comfortable with and causing them to grow. Sometimes they need some coaching to handle this increased responsibility that they're dealing with. And so this can come up in a number of ways. One is homework management. Sometimes students are wasting time at school, and so that's why they have so much homework. And so you need to tell them that and make them understand it. Sometimes a student is so meticulous with their test preparation. They spend hours preparing for the test. They make perfect grades, but the test should have only taken 30 minutes to prepare for. And so you need to speak into those types of situations a lot. Sometimes you have a student who's so meticulous about their handwriting that they can hardly get their work done. And I've had to encourage students to write faster and a little more sloppy. It's fine, okay? Maybe a student is doing really well in math, but is barely getting it done. So there's different approaches here. If they're doing really well, maybe there's a time to cross some of the questions out. Maybe it's a meticulousness, a perfection complex problem that you need to speak into some. It could be a variety of things. If a student is not making it, perhaps they need to just audit the class or get dropped out of a class altogether. But the goal isn't to make it easy for students. It's rather to make it just right. So all of these things and more that we didn't have time to talk about can work together to earn you the respect of your students. But the fact is, even when you do all of these things perfectly, you're probably going to still run into situations where you feel disrespected by a student. Every situation is different, but I just want to cover a few ways that we should respond to disrespect that's coming from students. One is to communicate one-on-one with that student. These are very simple ideas. I know addressing this with a student isn't very fun for either one of you, but one thing it does is it makes them feel like an adult, and they will respect you at some level for having the courage to come talk to them about their disrespect. I really believe that, if you address it kindly with them. Praying for your students. Again, if you have a student that's hard to love, praying for them will help you see them as Christ sees them. It really does. Communicate with parents and the school board about problems. But just a note here, don't be overly quick to go to a parent or the school board. Someone told me, it might have been you, Jonathan, I don't remember, that if you take something to the school board, a little something, they will make it a big something. And that was a really good piece of advice. If it's a small situation, just deal with it. And if the problem persists, then you can go to the parent and eventually to the school board for help on it. But they will make it a big deal, right? So do that carefully. Don't allow negative attitudes in your classroom. I tell my students at the beginning of the year that they are not allowed to complain, that they can bring any gripe that they have to me personally and voice that. They're welcome to do that, but it needs to be between me and them and not between them and the entire classroom. And pray for wisdom. And the Bible is so clear that if we ask God for wisdom, He will give it to us, and not in small measure, but abundantly, if we ask in faith. So you can claim this promise for yourself. Pray for wisdom in every situation and also at the beginning of the day. In conclusion, be a professional teacher by modeling the character qualities of Jesus, who was the professional teacher. Approach difficult situations as Jesus would approach them, with honesty and humility. Pray for wisdom. And in meekness, search for understanding in the situation. And I believe with this approach, God will guide you through some of these situations, that you can't respond to every situation with a practical answer necessarily. So I hope that will help you command respect in your classrooms.